Welcome back to Swan and Judd Review. I'm Tom Swanner.
This is Brian Judd.
And you'd think that I could have watched more considering I was indoors a lot because of this heat wave that we're going through, but there's nothing on. So I've watched a lot of YouTube that doesn't count, but I'm going to talk anyway. Here we go. Let's start off with,
It is your talent to talk at length about nothing, so.
Oh, thank you. Hey, that sounds like an insult.
No.
Okay. No, okay. RuPaul's Drag Race this week. They had the Rusical. This is what they've been doing pretty much every season now is some funny musical. This time it was Rosemary's Baby Shower. So, play off of Rosemary's Baby, and they had this, it starts off where she's there with her husband and they're trying to get an apartment. And then the old lady next door talks them into it. And and then while she's, alone in the house, she gets, she has her demon dream and gets pregnant. And so they throw her a baby shower. And this is where they bring in the rest of the characters. They've got Megan, that's that little robot horror movie doll that came out a couple years ago.
Oh, sure.
They've got Reagan McNeil from The Exorcist. She comes. And then the other one was, Pennywise from It comes to the show. And they all had their own songs and dances and stuff. It was actually really fun. So
are the songs originals? Are they takes on popular songs?
Most of them are originals. So, you can just see, if you go on to RuPaul's Drag Race on YouTube, you can actually just see the Rusical as well. So it's there available.
You think they're written for the performer beforehand?
No, because they have to pick who's going to be cast in what role.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, but they, like I said, they do this pretty much every year. They did Moulin Rouge. They've done The Sound of Music, and they mix it up a little bit. They don't quite adhere to the actual story all the time, but it's pretty close. But some of the performances were really, really good, especially the girl who played the robot girl. She was really good. And the person that comes in as the devil was really good too. So the robot doll and the old lady that invites them in or shows them the apartment, they were the two winners of the week, which is funny because that's the role that Ruth Gordon won her Oscar for, the old lady next door. Mm-hmm. And even though that the part was smaller, she was attentive through the entire, you could see her watching everything during the show. And you know how sometimes people are, if they're not talking, they're not thinking, sure, on stage. So that she was really good. They ended up tying and both getting money for their charities, which is, at this point, we like everybody. So we just want charities to get money now.
Sure.
Okay, over on The Goat, that's with Daniel Tosh. It's just trash. It's a trash show with these terrible people from reality TV, and I just can't get enough of it.
It sounds like that's right up your alley. So what makes this any more or less trashier than
it's Tosh. Tosh is what keeps it more entertaining.
Well, not entertaining, like but you said trash because the Road Rules one sounds like that's trash. Why is this one more trashy?
Just because it's like these are like nobody people. They think they're so important and they think they're so interesting. And sure, some are, but others are just like, who are you? I mean, you were on a show called 90 Day Fiance. Come on, seriously. This does not make you a star, but you think you're a star. It's just kind of funny. And you don't get really connected to anybody. So it's all the more you get to just judge, I guess. Yeah, so fun times. The Good Doctor, which is ran 7 seasons on ABC. We just finished the last episode, and it was quite emotional. I didn't cry though. I didn't cry.
Well, that's surprising.
But the whole thing was, you know, they tied up everything, and then we got a 10 years later at the very end to see how everybody was doing, and and it was emotional.
Sure.
Let's see, Arnie this week, he visited a popular food truck in Austin that makes traditional street tacos, and the guy's actually was nominated for a James Beard Award. So
wow. And but they are texts on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah. They're now approaching food trucks and things like, cause the there's a taqueria here in Roseville that won the James Beard Award for tacos. So it's nice that they're branching out, and it's not all, you know, French food. You know, it's like, oh, who's got the most buttery, creamy bullshit? Yeah. So I'm glad about that. This week on Evil, they were the story. The person that they're trying to save is this guy. He's an engineer. He drives trains, and he keeps seeing this girl on the tracks in a white dress, and he sees her. He can't stop the train, and when he does stop the train, he looks back and he sees a demon dragging her body away. And so they're like, oh, okay. So two of the three go to drive his route with him to see if they can see what he saw. And so they're driving. He sees the woman. He slams on the brakes. He goes back to look. But the priest, the guy who's the priest, he sees the demon. He doesn't see the girl. He sees the demon. And then he sees the demon climb off of the, because they're up on the raised tracks. So he sees the demon climb down from the track and go down, climb down the bridge area, whatever they call those things, the raised area. And then the other guy that's with him goes, what happened? He goes, didn't you see that? The thing, it was there. It crawled down and then all of a sudden they look down, and the one guy calls Kristen, who's the girl, and goes, hey, Kristen, can you come out of your house? And she's like, what do you mean? Just come out to your backyard. Why? Go to your backyard. And so she comes out, and she looks up, and the demon climbed down from the track into her backyard. So, so now they know that the demon, there's something demonic living in their house, and there's a big hole in their basement. So they get Andrea,
Martin.
Andrea Martin, and you know, she's the great nun in the show. She goes into the hole and finds this demon, and finds, you know, she's going, you're going to have to leave. And he goes, I don't have to leave here. And the demons are always really funny. And so she gets them to come back and seal the demon in the wall so he can't come moving out and back and forth.
That's a bit far-fetched.
Oh, no, not at all. But this, it's kind of
sealing a demon behind a wall.
Well, if you can't kill him, and she can't kill him.
But he's a demon.
Right, but she's killed other demons.
Well, she killing can't, demons, but locking them in, behind something.
Well, what she can't drag him out.
Sure.
Yeah. But anyway,
I don't know.
Anyway, so at the same time, the girls that live in the house, her daughters, they have an iPad with a demon detector or a ghost detector on it, and so. Everybody now knows that the house is got shit going on to it. And also, Christine Lottie, who plays her mother, tried to kill Leland, who's the main bad guy. Well, she didn't try to kill him. She just shoves a knife in his crotch when they were fighting. Yeah, it was pretty brutal. But things are coming. You know, I know we're coming to the end of the series. So big things are happening over on Paramount Plus and Evil. And then the show from Disney Plus, that's the new Star Wars show that's coming on now that I can never pronounce.
Acolyte.
What happened was they had a big thing that happened in the last episode where a lot of the bad guy, we finally unmasked the bad guy. He kills a bunch of the Jedis. And then when he leaves with there's two twin girls. One's good, one's bad. He thinks he's leaving with the bad one. No, he steals the good one, takes her away as a hostage. And the other girl pretends that she's her sister to go off with the Jedi that survived.
This sounds like a bad soap opera.
Well, it's not as good as it started out being. But
isn't Star Wars always been known as a space opera?
No, I think that was what was that horrible Apple thing? Wasn't that
a space in space?
Well, it should have, because then we wouldn't have been able to hear it.
You're funny.
Yeah, The Boys this week, just you know, as always. Gore, you know, fun shit. It seems like it's moving so quickly, you know, to the end of the season. Not particularly. It's been renewed for another season, but I don't want to see it end. It's just too much fun. House of Dragons, it's okay. You know, I mean, it looks great. It is. I revel in the costumes and the sets. They are everything. And then there's way too many blonde people, and I know that's the whole, that's the dragon people are all blondes, including the people of color are blondes as well. I don't understand it, but you know, I guess we want to keep this diverse. So otherwise it's just like
so you have just the issue with them being blonde?
No, it's just it's the storylines are so, it's like, oh, they killed the baby king, so now we're gonna attack them, and then the guy that actually killed the baby, sent the people out to kill the baby, he leaves on a dragon and goes to this other place, and he comes in and goes, I'm taking over this place, and they're like going, yeah, go ahead, it's pretty shitty, it rains all the time, we hate it here, we have no king, go ahead, it's yours to have. And I'm like, wow, that was easy. But I mean, these guys are just so, it's like, you know, being in Seattle on a very rainy, you know, winter. Sure. And these people are just, they're all so depressed. And the guy comes in, he's like thinking he's going to have to, you know, fight to take over this kingdom. And they're just like, no, fuck it. We don't care. Just take it.
But what's that got to do with them being blonde?
Well, he's one of the blondes. Yeah, I just don't like the blonde people. They're also boring. I part of it, I think, is okay, that on the original Game of Thrones, the blonde girl, well, the blonde people, they had the dragons, but they were always so I never liked them. I always liked the family that we were following, and they weren't blondes. So I've got a thing against blondes in the show.
Okay. Yeah.
On The Bear, over on Hulu, another just the episodes and the acting and the writing are just also good. What happened was at the end of the last episode, they found out that they had been reviewed without being told that they were going to be reviewed. So they're like, oh my God, what the fuck did we do wrong that night? You know, but they don't even know what night it was. So they're just like panicked. And then this episode was, they were sending over someone to take a picture of the restaurant, take pictures of the restaurant, you know, the kitchen, the food. And they had particularly one thing that they mentioned, that they had the duck the one night, and they're like going, shit, well, I don't even know, you know, they're going, we change the menu every night. I mean, we might have duck a l'orange one night, and the next night we're having, you know, duck with broccoli, or we're having broccoli, you know, and they're, because they've been bitching that he keeps changing the menu every night. And then now he can't produce the meal that, because they don't know which meal it was, just because he's always doing it. So
they don't keep track. They don't have records. They don't have old menus.
They might, but they don't know which night they came. So it wouldn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
So, and
a plot hole to me.
Why is that a plot hole?
No one keeps record of what they serve on a certain night.
No, they might keep record of it. But if you don't know what night he came, the records don't matter anyway.
And the reviewer's just going to say, I had the duck. It was just duck. It was duck. I'm not going to talk about what it tasted like or what it was served with.
Girl,
he just came in and said, I had duck. It was great.
Okay, before you start rambling on about what you don't know about, they're sending a photographer over to take a picture of the restaurant. He doesn't know what the review was. All he knows is, I need to take a picture of that duck dish.
So they just told the guy, said, we had duck. We need a picture of it.
Right.
And he can't say, well, what kind of duck did you have?
No. Well, he didn't know they didn't change the menu. For all the photographer knows, is it's the same fucking menu that they have, just like Denny's.
But
you
know,
when you get the Grand Slam's always going to look like the Grand Slam. Okay, he doesn't know that they changed the menu nightly.
But no one at the restaurant. No one at the restaurant could have said, oh, you know what? We serve several different kind of duck. Do you happen to remember what kind of duck you had?
Girl, the photographer shows up and says, I want to take a picture of the duck menu, or the duck item.
Sounds like a bunch of fucking White Christmas bullshit to me.
Okay, sure.
As far as, you know, Rosemary not asking any questions, just running off and going. The whole episode could have been solved with, what kind of duck was it? Oh, that's great. We would love you to come take photographs. However, we prepare several different kinds of duck. Do you remember what kind of duck you had?
Okay. They didn't contact him, the restaurant directly. The reviewer did not. They don't even know who reviewed it. What they do know is that they're coming over to film the restaurant and some of the food. And when the guy gets there, he says, duck dish.
Oh, now it's all last minute. See? No. That's why I don't watch the show.
Good. I'm glad you don't. I did see two movies this week. First one was King Kong versus Godzilla, or Godzilla versus King Kong, the New Beginning or the New Era or something. Anyway, in this particular one, what happens is we're following both Godzilla, who's up in, let's say, our world. And then what happened is, in one of the earlier ones, they sent King Kong to the Middle Earth, but not the Middle Earth from, you know, Lord of the Rings, sure. Or The Hobbit. Yeah, this is where all these dinosaurs and things, they've been living for years and years underneath this dimension. But we also find out that that there's a they're sending out like an SOS from this place, and they don't know who's doing that. And then they come to find out, so they got King Kong down there, they got Godzilla, and what Godzilla's doing is he's protecting the world from all the bad monsters up on top, but he's getting this SOS sent to him to come down and save something that's going, it's the people down there. And then we find out that there are people down there, and they're the ones that are protecting Mothra. So Mothra makes the big, coming out in this one. Mothra is always one of my favorites, you know, with the two little girls that would sing the Mothra song.
Sure.
And I can't sing it because I can't get that high. My voice that high. Yeah.
That high.
And so, that was, it was fun. It's weird online because it just came out on Max. And all these people are like talking about, well, it's not as good as Godzilla Minus Zero. Well, they're two completely different approaches. That was kind of an artsy Godzilla movie.
Sure.
Where this one is more of a, you know, we're going to bust up some, you know, some cities when Godzilla has to walk from the port over to, you know, he's going to tear up the place. We know that. And boy, there's one sequence where they end up going through some porthole and they end up in Buenos Aires. And it's so funny because there's all these people on the beach and they, the portal that they come through is in the right off the beach. So they're all running from the beach, you know, oh no, we're going to die. And then, but you know, with their fire, and one of them has a, one of them, well, Godzilla can do the fire thing or whatever that is. He spits out. Well, one of the other creatures that they have, it sends out cold, like it'll freeze everything.
Oh.
And they're fighting. And so they're right along the big resort area with all the hotels, and they've killed everybody. They've killed everybody in Buenos Aires, you know, that's along the beach. That it's like, oh no, get away from the beach. We're going to die. Let's run to the hotel. Well, you know, that didn't work out either. There's a lot of destruction. But you know, it's what you expect from these Godzilla movies.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
And this one to me was much more entertaining than Godzilla Minus Zero. Yeah. This was entertaining. This was more traditional Godzilla movie.
Well, this was a rack 'em up, crash 'em up creature feature where Godzilla Minus One or whatever. One, it was a return to the roots, and two, it was more about the people than it was about Godzilla. I mean, I think the original.
Yeah,
I've tried watching the original Godzilla several times, and I fall asleep every time.
Now, is that the one with Raymond Burr in it, or the original before Raymond Burr was put into it?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, because what happened with the original?
I can't remember because I've fallen asleep.
Yeah, well, that's it was interesting because they made the original one and it did really well, and so they wanted to bring it. They wanted to do it in America, so they just hired Raymond Burr to be. He's like narrating it from his point of view. And it was very successful. I thought they did a really good job of doing it. But if you watch the other one, it's totally different. It's totally different because it was our point of view, not Raymond Burr's point of view. So
sure.
It was kind of like he was telling us what to watch. And I've loved them since then. So this one was more of that. I think that the more traditional people are going to like this one a lot. So the second movie I saw was Beverly Hills Cop.
So you watched it, huh?
14. I don't sure, know. Whatever these. I think it's actually like the fourth one, maybe. And what they did was they had brought back a lot of the characters that were in the original movie. So it's like, you know, they can flash back and show pictures and it's actually them, right, which was nice. In this case, Axel Foley's back in Detroit, but his daughter, who's a attorney, is living in Los Angeles. They don't like each other anymore. But she's working pro bono for any, you know, poor schmuck that gets, you know, in trouble. And this one particular one has the bad cops are involved. So she's being threatened. And the Judge Reinhold character is no longer working for the force, but he's working. He knows there's shit going on. So he calls up Axel and goes, you know, your daughter's involved in something that she really, I told her to get out of, but she's not going to do it. And I'm worried about her. And then he ends up getting, his character gets kidnapped. Axel comes looking for him and try to get the girl to like him again, because they've been, you know, not happy with each other for about 5 years or more. So the best part of the whole movie is that Judge Reinhold gets kidnapped very early in the show, and he is so terrible. He's so terrible. He's talking on the phone with Eddie Murphy's character, and Sean goes, wow, he's really bad. And I'm going, he is.
Acting goes, or his character?
Acting.
Really?
Oh my God. It was like, okay, you're literally on a phone phoning it in, because that's how exactly it felt. It was, but you know, he does come in later and redeems himself once there's action going on. But it was a lot of old guys trying to do what they did, you know, what, almost 40 years ago.
Sure. Yeah.
And it felt that way. They felt a little tired. You know, Eddie Murphy's trying to give the old Axel Foley, you know, smile and the energy, but it's just, none of them were there with the energy. It was nice seeing everybody, but you know, okay. Sure. It still is as terrible of a storyline as any of the old, you know,
see any of them growing up. I don't know if my mom didn't let me watch them or if I had no, Eddie Murphy was not allowed in the house because he was vulgar.
Oh, okay. I'm glad it's just, he was vulgar.
At least that was, I think that was what she said. Could have been.
Yeah. Mom. Yeah. You know, no daughter of the
Confederacy
for you. No.
So I didn't see, I think maybe the only Eddie Murphy movie that I ever saw growing up was Golden Child. So these Beverly Hills Cop movies mean nothing to me. And then, Of course, Netflix sent me an email earlier this weekend going, hey, we've got a new one for you. I'm like, no, you don't.
What was nice is that that it did go directly to Netflix and not to theaters, like, you know, because they just, what is that stupid Will Smith and Martin Lawrence garbage?
Bad Boys.
Yeah, they just brought out a new Bad Boys.
Yeah,
you know, and believe me, if it's as tired as these guys were, I'd be pissed that I had to pay for it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't even think I saw Coming to America until, no, I did see that one when I was a kid. So those are the only two Eddie Murphy movies I was allowed to see. I think the other ones were, oh, no, that's too adult. Too adult.
Yeah. Now, did you ever, now, well, when did the Shrek shows come out? Those were later, weren't they?
Oh, I was already living out in California. Those came out in the late 90s. I think the first one probably had to have been the late 90s or 2000 at the latest.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was too old and didn't care at that point. The first one was all right, I guess. Not that I've watched it since.
Wait, are we talking Shrek now?
Yeah.
Okay, we're not talking Shrek. No, we're talking about Eddie Murphy's Beverly Hills Cop that you never saw.
Oh, when did that one come out?
I know when that came out. I'm just saying, don't go on to Shrek. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Eddie Murphy.
Okay. Is there anything else?
What about your week? Just what about your week? Yeah, you have some more disgusting things about Gone with the Wind to tell us?
Well, so I finished the book, then I watched the movie, all 3 hours of it. And it was interesting because the movie completely sanitizes all of the racism. I mean, outside of the slavery, but I mean, that is about as minimal as you can go. That the original book had. In fact, there's one scene where Scarlett is making her way, after she's made her way back to Terra as Rhett abandons her. She finds a cow and she tells Pork, which is her father's chaperone or head house servant, to go milk the cow. And in the book, he says, but Miss Scarlett, I'm a house mummer, not a field hand. And in the movie, he refers to himself as a house worker. So same hard R, but a different word altogether. And then there was another scene where there's a black and white gentleman, obviously a Yankee, and he comes across some Confederate soldiers that won't get out of his way. And they finally shoo him off, and they're like, God, they act like they won the war, where, you know, the whole book is about, oh, if only we would have won the war, the lost cause. Oh, it would have been the best thing ever. However, I did watch another movie the first time since I actually bought it, Mandingo, which basically what they did is they took all the racism that was in the original Gone with the Wind and wrung it out into Mandingo. Plenty of hard R words left and right in there. And the movie is about, I can't remember who said, who made the quote, but they said basically, Mandingo is Gone with the Wind, but on a bad acid trip. You know, everything is Gone with the Wind. It is very large and well lit and beautiful. Even when they're dirty and poor, they're still gorgeous. Whereas in Mandingo, everything, it just looks moldy and dingy. And it's probably the end of the Confederacy. And the house is gross and everyone speaks like white trash. So a son buys his father a fighting slave, who's a real Mandingo. He moves him into the house. The son gets married, marries his cousin, which is what happened in Gone with the Wind as well. But his cousin isn't a virgin when they get married, and she refuses to tell him who took her virginity, why she isn't pure. Of course, it comes out, and spoiler alert, it was her brother. And then he sleeps with a black slave to get back for her, to get back at him. She ends up having sex with the Mandingo, or seduces Mandingo, which is Ken Norton, an extremely fine looking Ken Norton. And because for whatever reason, it's okay for the husband to have his black side piece, his wife cannot. So he ends up killing Mandingo in the end. I think everyone dies in the end. So it's very much a me movie, but very hard to watch. Very hard to watch because of the fight scenes are extremely graphic and bloody, and not necessarily real. Well, I guess, I mean, outside that super red blood of the 70s, the stuff that looked like melted crayons, right. Outside of that, the fight scenes are pretty savage, and then just the way that they treat the slaves throughout the movie. One of the first scenes is there's a slave, she's about to give birth, and the plantation owner talking to his son, he's like, oh, Big Pearl's gonna be fine, doctor what's it, he's the best veterinarian in the county. You hear it, it's like you go, oh my god. And then it turns out there's really nothing wrong with her, she's not pregnant, she's just in heat. So she needs to be fucked, and that'll set her right up, she'll be right back to normal. She's just in heat. Yeah, like, it's just that constant, like I said, all the stuff, all the racism that was concentrated in Gone with the Wind was wrung out of the movie and then made into Mandingo. So it's when Django Unchained came out, everyone was talking about how hard that was to watch, and you know how violent it was, and you know how horrible they felt for the slaves. And I said, but that is it. Django is nothing. That's an introductory to what Mandingo is. If you can, I don't know if they, I don't think you can stream it. I have it on disc. If you're into blaxploitation movies, especially weird ones like that, I would say it's a go, but it is a tough watch.
Well, I remember when it came out because it was hard to get to because it was pretty much made to be a drive-in movie. And what I mean by drive-in movie is that there were movies that were made to go to drive-ins and to low budget theaters.
Sure. You know, like direct, it was a direct direct-to-video type of thing.
Nowadays, it would be considered direct-to-video, yeah. And you know, once I was able to drive and go to the drive-ins, because the drive-ins were the place to, that the drive-ins had all the fun stuff. You know, you could go see the Poseidon Adventure, you could go see the Godfather, you can go see the Sting, and, you know, One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest at any theater. But if you want to see Cannibal Girls or you want to see Mandingo, or you wanted to see whether it was blaxploitation or horror, gore horror, just all the really fun stuff, you had to go to the drive-in for it. Or you had to be close to one of those secondary theaters. I remember Mad Max and Road Warrior originally came out. They went to the secondary theaters. They didn't go to the big theaters first. Until the one with Tina Turner came out, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, it's mainstream now. But before that, yeah. And so that's just kind of the way they used to run them. So I just wish these were more readily available.
Well, and the producer, he was, I don't know if he was as Roger Corman as far as budgetary means go, you know, producing five movies in a week.
Sure.
With recycling the set. But the gentleman's name was Agostino De Laurentiis. And if you ever watched Giada De Laurentiis on the Cook Food Network, that's her grandfather. And he produced Serpico, Death Wish, Mandingo, Conan the Barbarian, Blue Velvet from 1986, the 1976 King Kong remake, the 1980 Flash Gordon movie, The Dead Zone, Silver Bullet, Maximum Overdrive. So, I mean, big movies, but still very much in that kind of over the top B vein.
Right. Yeah. Now, Dino De Laurentiis was that his brother?
Dino, that is him. So Augustino / Dino
De Laurentiis. Okay. Because I remember the De Laurentiis was, you know, I mean, they were the ones producing schlock, and for the most part, and that you could, it was dependable schlock, you know, with the Conans and with that especially that genre that they brought out, the Flash Gordon fun stuff.
Oh, Barbarella from 1968.
Well, there you go. Yeah. All the good stuff. You know, if that's your taste, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've watched most of these. Barbarella was not great. It was just boring. Excellent soundtrack, though.
Yeah.
And I think, did I say He-Man? No, but Conan. I wonder who did He-Man then? Because that was another schlocky.
Oh, yeah. That was a stinker. fun stinker, but yeah. I'll look up He-Man. You go ahead and talk about the rest of your week.
I started reading Gentleman Preferred Blonde by Anita Loos. It was written in 1925. It actually came out the same year as The Great Gatsby, which I've tried reading several times and just, oh God, it infuriates me. I hated it in high school. And I, as an older adult now, I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm missing something. I'm not missing anything. The book's a piece of shit. But this Gentleman Prefers Blondes, it's an adorable book. I mean, the movie with Marilyn Monroe and, is it Susan Hayward? It's been sanitized a little bit. Marilyn Monroe, I mean, she's still a gold digger in the movie, of course. I mean, one of my favorite lines is, I'm not marrying him. I don't love him for his money. I love him for your money, as she's talking to his rich older dad. But the book itself is written as a diary. Lorelei Lee is writing this diary as she travels through Europe. Where instead of being stuck on the cruise ship, she goes to London, but she doesn't like London because the men are cheap and that tower you can't even see it from a couple blocks away. She likes, and then every country that she goes to the Ritz Hotel because it's just like going, it's just like being in New York, but not. So she's just, it's this really great, ditzy, fun character who takes herself very seriously, and, it, you know, extorting men for money.